Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's ZOZO Championship. And joining me to break it all down, it's him. It's Kyle Porter, KP. Two ball, buddy. Just you and I. You ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, I never get introduced first, and now I am getting introduced first and last, and yeah, I'm ready to do this. We got a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about. I'm wearing my Tiger Woods. Have you ever seen this hat, by the way? This is an actual official Tiger Woods logo. They turned into an 83, which is an amazing use of the logo. But I'm wearing this because, you know, this is the event Tiger got 82 at, and it's mostly wishful thinking with the 83.
Where did you get that?
I got it on eBay, but I believe that they have been Nike has been selling some version of these for at least a couple of years.
It's really cool.
I mean, it's smart. They took the TW, they removed the T, they flipped everything sideways and made it into an 83. Now he just has to get the 83rd victory, and that will be it'll be like an iconic logo.
Yeah, it is pretty sweet. I feel like. So I've been thinking about golfer logos recently for a project that I'm working on that we can talk about later. And Tiger's, I think you look at Tiger's logo. I can't believe we're talking about Tiger Woods' logo off the top of the ZOZO Championship recap, but to be expected. I think you look at Tiger's logo and you're like, yeah, it's okay. But then you start comparing it to other golf logos and you're like, that it's pretty good. Right. Like there's not really any good golf logos. Golfer logos. There's obviously a ton of good golf logos, but golfer logos is difficult.
So okay. Do you remember Tiger's like first logo that like it was a circle?
Yin, whatever it's called.
Yeah. And then that, and then he,
I'm butchering it.
Yin Yang. Right.
Is that right? I think that's right.
I don't know. But then he went
Jacob,
to the TW.
Jump in here. Help us.
Is it Yin Yang or Yin Yang?
Yin Yang.
There you go.
Okay.
Yin Yang. Okay. Yeah. The issue with golfer logos is they only go two ways. Initials or silhouette. Those are the only two options, which I guess makes sense, but it's a little unfortunate. There's got to be a better way to start doing this.
Well, you could go with like why is Tiger's logo not a tiger?
Has he ever really?
Here
we go.
I happen to be wearing my like actual Tiger Woods,
Frank
t-shirt. So this is a more recent logo that they've come out with at Nike. That sort of, you know, is Frank, the head cover. So
they
recently have embraced sort of this, and they do make these with the Frank logo on the cap, and those look pretty slick.
Yeah, but that's not Tiger Woods logo.
Yeah, the TW down at the bottom here.
There you go.
That's the Tiger Woods.
You almost just showed us your bare skin on the First Cut Podcast.
We would have had to change this from a PG to an R-rated show.
I feel like the golfer logos don't fit in with the broader culture of like golf logos. Like there's some amazing, I mean, obviously like so many of the top clubs, you know, you think about Wingfoot or Seminole or Augusta National, like they just have amazing logos that are very desirable. And somehow golfers have gone as far away from that as possible. It's like, I think of somebody like Angel Cabrera, which bad example, because you know, everything that's happened to him recently, but why is his logo, I don't know, even know if he has a logo, but why would his logo not be like a duck, right? Isn't that his nickname? Like El Pato?
Are golfers using logos? So see, their logo is still part of their manufacturer's deal, right? Like, or could Tiger take the TW logo away from Nike and profit off of it? Or is it more of just an extension off of their current sponsorship obligation?
That's a good question. And I think what one of the things that's interesting is Rory does not have a logo, right? He's one of the few, like even like DJ's logo is actually pretty good.
It's that lowercase D, right?
Yeah. And it's also a J. I think it's also a J.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a lowercase D and a capital J. Does that work? I don't know. I don't know if I'm thinking about it correctly.
Yeah, that works.
JT's is not good. Hunter Mahan had one that was not good. JJ Henry has a logo. Phil's is actually pretty good. I kind of like that.
I mean, Phil's works because that's exactly it. Phil's works because it's the essence of Phil, right? Yeah, he can pull that off, totally. Right? He can, a more serious golfer could not pull off a silhouette of him jumping 2 inches off the ground. That couldn't happen. I mean, even Kevin Na's like reaching into the cup or whatever, or walking forward, like, you know, there it is. I look at the producer. Jacob,
I had that on. Yeah. Tap. That was nice.
I figured you did.
That's
this
tough.
Is what, this is what engendered the rabbit hole for me that I jumped down recently was this one right here. It feels like a miss by golfers because there's so many like great golf logos and so few golfers actually have good ones.
All right, I'm gonna try to,
not that bad.
I'm gonna try to bridge this back here. What would Hideki Matsuyama's ideal logo be?
It would be the bow, even though he didn't do it.
He didn't do the bow though.
I know. I don't know. See, that's where like, does Hideki have a nickname?
In the fantasy community, he's referred to as Deckybot because he's like a, you know, the swing's like a robot. But I don't know if he embraces that nor knows that.
I've actually heard that. See, something like that would be like if Hideki had like I almost feel like the more obscure the better. If Hideki had a like came out and was like, "Hey, here's my logo. It's a robot." I legitimately would buy a hat that was a robot of Hideki. Would you not?
I would, because it would also make me feel like I was in on something.
Totally. And I feel like that's like half the deal with stuff like Wingfoot and like these logos of different clubs is like if you know, you know, right? Like you don't,
right?
Like you're wearing it so that your friends are like, oh, you know, well, whatever. And it's just like the initials are just they don't make it, that's not part of that deal. Anyway, let's talk about Hideki.
Hideki Matsuyama wins the Zozo Championship, his 7th career victory on the PGA Tour. He did not go wire to wire, but he was in the mix throughout the entirety of this event. And KP, when the dust settled, it says it's a 5-shot victory, but it certainly did not feel like that about midway through the final round when Cameron Tringale actually tracked him down. And I was thinking, oh boy, Tringale, as much as I want you to break this stretch where you have made more money than anyone without a victory, it can't be here. It can't be over Hideki in Japan, yeah. Right? Like I'm always actively rooting for Tringale, but I could not in this moment.
Well, for sure. Hideki's back nine was super impressive, though, right? Because, like, I saw it when it was, he was at 13, and Tringale, did Tringale get it to 13 or just 12?
I think just 12. Yes, just 12.
And then Hideki just kind of, I mean, his back nine was big time. And he said, like, you know, I saw in his transcripts are amazing, by the way. If you're just want something fun to read, like they're hilarious and like just they're very endearing. I feel like just the way he talks about things. And he said, he was asked, when did you know it was over? And he said, well, the shot on 18, like, and I was like, really? You could have made like a 9 on 18 and still won the golf tournament.
I could have pinch hit for him there and still won this golf tournament.
Which is a very Hideki thing to say, but it was, you know, he kind of closed out the tournament the way that he started it, right? He goes out 64 on Thursday, maintains that through Friday, Saturday, and then he shuts it down, not on the front nine on Sunday, but on the back nine. And it was cool, man. Like that, I think that we lose some of the context because it's 3 a.m. We don't understand Hideki's relationship with the country of Japan, but what a dream season, right? To start it with a Masters win, to close it with, people might think like, oh, well, it would have been cooler if it was the Olympics. I don't think Hideki cares. I think he just wanted to win once at a high level in his home country. And he did that. And it was like, did anybody have a more memorable year than Hideki? Maybe Morikawa?
No. The answer is Hideki. By a mile.
I think so, right? Yeah. And I wrote about this afterward, like one of the more memorable years of anybody in the modern era, honestly. And that sounds like, I'm not saying more successful or more accomplished or anything like that, but more memorable to win the Masters and to be able to take that to Japan, to play it, just to participate in the Olympics in Japan, and then to win a tour event to close out the year in Japan. Like that has to be like one of the more unparalleled runs in the modern era of just memorable golf for somebody at that level. Do you agree?
I 1000% agree. And I also like that you and I in this moment, and most of us, we cannot truly kind of figure out how important this is for him and his relationship with his country. And you just start looking at the numbers and you start to think, if someone would do this for America, for another country, like it would be unheard of, right? So this is the 7th PGA Tour victory for Hideki Matsuyama. So he now owns over half of all PGA Tour victories for Japanese players, 7 out of 13. We talked about that earlier in the week on Tuesday. It was 6 out of 12, now 7 out of 13. And even if you open this up to Asia, an entire continent, right? KJ Choi is now one win behind KJ Choi for PGA Tour titles, which is 8. That's the most wins by an Asian player. So you really have to zoom out for a second. Like the historical context that Hideki is walking in right now for his country, for his continent, is like pretty staggering stuff.
Well, it's super interesting because then you have to start talking about, okay, who are the, if I said best player from each continent all time, who are your 6, right? So if you take wow, Antarctica out of it, right?
We're going to get an email or a tweet about that. So-and-so great golfer from Antarctica.
They are not a huge participant on the OWGR homepage. So I don't know what to tell y'all. So if you take Antarctica out of it, I did not think that's a sentence I would be saying on a golf podcast. Take Antarctica out of it. Who are your 6 from every other continent, best all time? And I think we could if you want to talk about that, I'd love to. But I think Hideki's probably, I don't know, this is maybe a little unfair because I'm not as, we're younger and we don't have like maybe some good historical context, not just in Asia, but Australia and wherever. I think Hideki is probably it or close to it.
Let's just do this. Well, the thing is, even if he's not now, he's 29. So it's
dude, that's crazy, right? Like I was looking that up. He's like 9 years younger than DJ, or maybe eight years younger. And I kind of think of, and this is maybe just dumb on my part, but I kind of think about them in the same broad group age-wise, sort of. I think DJ seems a little younger, and Hideki's been around for so long that it's a little like, you know, aren't you like 35? And he's still in his 20s. That's crazy.
It is crazy. So Asia has to be Hideki or KJ Choi, I would imagine.
It's me. I agree. The Masters win is a monumental deal, you know? And I know KJ Choi won the players and has won more, but the Masters thing just trumps it for me.
Yeah. And in all likelihood, Hideki's not done winning. So hopefully he piles on more there. Let's go to Australia next. Australia's kind of.
Well, yeah. Here's and maybe we need producer. I'm going to get myself into some geography trouble here, but
I love it.
What continent is, this is going to be embarrassing. I should just put it in the chat. What continent is Vijay Singh from?
Fiji?
Well, yeah.
Is that part of?
No. It'd be
the Pacific. I mean, like sort of usually
like Asia, right? Like
Australia, Pacific.
I thought it was like Oceania or whatever.
Oceania is sort of, yeah.
Okay, so Vijay's in that conversation. Greg Norman's in it. Peter Thompson from the 50s is in it.
Yeah, I actually wasn't considering Vijay, which kind of throws a wrench into my. I kind of assumed it was Greg Norman, like off the top of the head. But
that was my first. That was my first thought. Also, I don't know. That one's interesting. We can come back to that. Africa. Gary Player
has to be right. Yeah. We will not slander. We will not take this one away from Gary Player. It has to be Gary Player. Friend of the pod.
You could throw. I mean, Ernie Els was probably better at golf than Gary Player, but Player's more accomplished. So
right, which I think you have to go. Okay. South America, Europe. Let's go to Europe. Europe's got a lot of good ones. I was leaning Seve because Seve's got, you know, the wins. Seve's also got the aura. See, it's kind of like weird how you like want to say the best golfer, right? Like, I think if you said who would their peers say was the best, it's Seve. Well, like 1000%.
Yeah,
which is probably, and I think, why I lean that way.
I think that's interesting because I've kind of written about best Euro ever in the past, and I think there's a pretty short path for Rory to get there, which sounds maybe crazy, but like what he's done, and this was when he was still like in his 20s and maybe turning 30, but just his trajectory was like, wow, if he went 7 majors, it's Rory McIlroy was probably the greatest European of all time, you know? And I think Faldo has the most majors ever for a Euro with 6. But I think that people would probably say like, hey, I know Faldo has more majors than Seve, but Seve was just, I don't know. You're right about like the aura thing. Like there's just something about him and like his presence and like all this different stuff. How many majors did Seve win? 3?
I thought it was 4, but I can find out real quick. 5. Wow. We each shorted him. 5. Open championship thrice and 2 masters.
So he's got to be ahead of Rory still probably, or close, or I don't know. Close to it. So let's just say Seve. We're making this up. Who cares? Okay. So we've got Hideki. We've got we've got confirmation that Vijay is like part of the Australia grouping.
Okay. So we give Oceania to Vijay.
If you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening, I guess on YouTube, we're on the Wikipedia page for Oceania, which is another thing that I didn't think I would ever would happen.
Europe gets Seve.
Yeah. Asia gets Hideki.
Africa's Gary Player.
Yeah.
So that leaves Oceania us with
Oceania's, did we say Vijay?
Vijay or Greg Norman, right?
Okay.
I'd probably say Vijay.
Not Matt Jones?
Not yet. There's time.
And then, still plenty of time. What do we, What are we missing?
North America and South America. So let's go to South. Well, North America is very easy, right? His name's Tiger Woods.
Yeah, the cat.
Right. So South America. I'm just gonna start. I have to get my brain into this by naming South American countries, right? So like,
It's got to be Angel Cabrera, right?
Ooh.
Two majors: Oakmont, Augusta. I mean,
52 professional wins.
I don't know.
But those are.
And this is where I'm a little short. I'm probably like just forgetting somebody or whatever, but I'm a little short on history of like, you know, South America, like Chilean golfers from the 70s or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through the list here. It might be Cabrera.
Yeah.
Where are we missing from? I mean, you got to think
Brazil,
Argentina,
Peru,
Chile, Peru,
Uruguay, Paraguay,
Venezuela. Is that in South America?
Johnny Vegas.
Soon.
Joaquin Neiman.
South America is not necessarily a golfing.
No haven. It might be Angel Cabrera.
Yeah, I think you have to default to Angel just because he's the only. I think he is the only one with majors, but I mean between Neiman, Mito coming up.
Well, Mito, give him 5 years. Too. That'll be fine.
Just, yeah. Can you imagine? On majors,
we'll have to do an off-season show of who will be the goat from all of these continents.
Okay, so we've got Vijay, Seve, Gary Player, Hideki, Angel, and Tiger.
It's a hell of a lineup, right? Yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, yeah. And good for Hideki. Like, I don't know, he's. I was always kind of neutral toward him. I didn't dislike him, but I wasn't like. I was never in love with him, and this year at the Masters he was so like endearing, and he was so, I don't know, I really became like a fan of his, if that's like the right way to even say that. I found myself, I think he has like a good worldview and perspective, and I found myself just rooting for him, especially in this week playing at the Zozo in Japan. So yeah, I don't know, man. It's been a really cool year for him, and I'm glad that he capped it with a win there.
I do also think it's interesting. Like he, not that he knew this year was coming, but there were some quotes from him. I think it was actually in 2019 where he was like, "I cannot wait for 2020 because, you know, the Olympics are going to be in Tokyo." And then like that whole thing gets pushed back. And I do wonder, this has probably been a really weird 2 years for everybody, but for him, who was kind of looking at an entire 2020 year of, "Hey, this is going to be a really great big opportunity for me. I'm so excited." He eventually gets it done in 2021, probably to the, you know, towards the ceiling of his expectations. I do wonder what this looks like moving forward for him. You know, does he need like that outside motivation of playing in Japan, or is he now much more comfortable in his own skin? Like, I'm excited to see what Hideki does in 2022 and beyond.
Yeah, I am too. You know, he talked after his win about how I think he was Shigeki Maruyama was like urging him toward that all-time Asian wins number of tying KJ Choi with 8 or maybe surpassing him with 9. And I think like, look, him and Hideki Matsuyama and Rory McIlroy have played almost the exact same number of tournaments, I think, on the PGA Tour. I think Rory's at like 205 and Hideki's at 201 or 202, something like that. And I think when you frame it like that, it still feels like there's a ton of runway there, even though I, like in my head, I just, for whatever reason, think of Hideki as being older. And we just talked about this. He's not. And not only is he not older, he doesn't have like a ton of miles on the, you know, on the odometer. So I think that's super compelling. And I think he's such a fun character and figure to have in golf right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. Cameron Tringale finishes T2 with Brendan Steele. Tringale, oh man, it's It's a weird place to be. He holds a record that I think he doesn't mind holding, right? But I don't think he wants to be the record holder of this any longer, which is the most money earned on the PGA Tour without a victory, upwards of $14 million at this point. Great career, lots of contention, improving year over year, still yet to find the winner's circle. It probably didn't matter when he bogeyed 17 and 18, but I mean, he was tied atop the leaderboard with six or seven holes to go here.
I think it's the thing I was saying about with him, it's got to be hard when you get, you know, two kind of rips at it a year to win a tournament. And, you know, the money, the most money ever without a win is kind of a fun thing, but it's also got to like mess with your head a little bit where you're like, oh, I'm actually, this is one of my two. I better take advantage of it. You just, it's so hard for somebody like that to stay in, like with Hideki or with Rory last week. It's like, I don't know, I'll have like 8, 9, 10 shots at a tournament over the next year,
right?
And that's not true of somebody like Tringali if he's realistic with himself. And that has to be a difficult mental battle or struggle, especially when you haven't won so many, you know, time after time after time after time. I don't know. That's how I was thinking about him as they kind of finished up with Hideki winning.
Since we've been framing this around how many starts these guys have, we know that Rory and Hideki are in the 200-ish range. Those are PGA Tour starts for Rory, right? You weren't counting like worldwide stuff. Okay.
Yeah,
Because that's what I have for Tringali here. Take a guess at how many starts Cameron Tringali has on the PGA Tour.
He's probably my age. He's probably like 35, 30. Maybe he's younger.
I won't tell you. Well, I'll tell you after. I won't influence your guess here.
I think he's 34, actually, but I might be wrong about that. Gosh, I don't know. 300?
Wow. Okay. He is 34. So correct. Yeah. 313. 313 okay. Starts. Last year, he made 27. It was his best year ever. He made $2.4 million, now up to 14.5. But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know out of these 313 how many he actually contended in, because he only has four runner-up finishes. So it's like, it really is a very, very small number of events that he is probably in contention with six holes to go. We saw one this week, but yeah, that's gotta, I would be fighting mental battles with myself if that were me.
Well, and I think it speaks to like this gap between, like, he's a good pro, right? Like, I think anybody would look at his career and say, he's been successful on this tour that includes 170 guys a year or whatever.
Yes,
whatever
for
the
sure.
number is. And yet it almost feels like he has, and this is not true, but it feels sometimes like he has no chance to win because of some of the guys that are beating him and how, like, I mean, it feels like a chasm. Now, there are events you can be in where there's those guys aren't playing or whatever, but that's got to be a difficult thing for somebody like him who's a journeyman, however you want to define that, to like deal with, of like, man, I'm really good, but like, there's still this, I mean, five shots on the tour is a, like, it's the Grand Canyon, right? If you're losing by that to somebody like Hideki, who's not going to make mistakes, that's just that mentally, that's to be tough to grapple with.
The fact that he even has had his tour card for 12 consecutive years is an unbelievable accomplishment, right? We see how deep, we're going through second stage just this week. Like, it's so hard to even get a tour card. The fact that you can keep it for 12 years is an unbelievable accomplishment. He is in the top tiny percent of professional golfers of all time. But God, he just wants that dart trophy on the mantle, doesn't he?
Well, it speaks to, I think people who are watching don't understand how good the Cameron Tringalis are, and it makes you lose context of how good the Rory McIlroys are. It's like, you don't understand how good Cameron Tringali is, which means you don't actually understand how good Rory is. We kind of look at like the superstars like singularly, and when you do that, you lose the context of how, like, Rory is, or Hideki, whoever, Spieth, DJ, whoever you want to throw in there, they are insane. Like, people don't, I think you just don't understand like how actually good they are because you don't understand how good Cameron Tringali is. And I think that is, that's an interesting kind of wrinkle in professional golf that I wish could be, I wish there was some way to like broadcast that or contextualize it. And it's just very difficult to do.
Cameron Tringali was 24th last season in strokes gained total. So you could argue Cameron Tringali was the 24th best player on tour last season ahead of Colin Morikawa and Jordan Spieth. That's why that name was in my brain. He's very, very good.
Yeah.
They do it in different ways. Fun stuff.
Totally.
We've got to get to our best bets. I got to talk about a couple other notables near the top of the leaderboard and also lots of money doled out in the one and done. Unfortunately, not as much to you, Kyle. More on that on the other side, because first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Couple of interesting names. Couple of interesting names here at the top of the leaderboard, or at least in contention at times this week. Tommy Fleetwood. Tommy Fleetwood finished T7 at the Zozo Championship, shot back-to-back 70s on the weekend, fell a little bit on Saturday and Sunday. But what is the current sentiment around Tommy Fleetwood right now?
I read this email newsletter called on rickrungood.com, and the proprietor of it tells me that Tommy Fleetwood has not been good since the 2020 Honda Classic. And
that's factually correct.
That is factually correct. The proprietor also tells me that that was an inflection point in Tommy Fleetwood's career. I think what is weird is, and this is where the Ryder Cup is not helpful. You're like, oh, Fleetwood's on the Ryder Cup team. He's still like, but like he, Tommy Fleetwood in 2021 is very different than Tommy Fleetwood in 2018, even though he's on like one of the lenses through which we see him is being on the Ryder Cup team, you know? And I think that that is like not tricking us, but he's just not like a, he's not like a threat going into major championships. Like, I'm not going to the, there was like a 3 or 4 year run there where it was like, hey, Fleetwood, like, I think he's one of my 15 guys that's like kind of in this. And I just don't, I don't know how you can say that right now, like while still subscribing to like reality, like the reality of the situation. And that's a bummer because I want, like, it's like golf is better when Tommy Fleetwood is thriving. It's super fun. And he's great and like the nice dude and great at golf. He's just not playing that well right now. So maybe this is something. Maybe it's a cat. I don't know what it is.
So the thing that I left out about that whole inflection point is a lot of Tommy's ball striking struggles closely align with his switch to TaylorMade. That timing. And I certainly, TaylorMade, if you're listening, love the products. Don't want to throw you under the bus. But we've seen this, right? I'm not saying this is the issue, but we've seen this with guys who, whether they can't get comfortable with new sticks, it's a different process. Some guys feel like they're starting over a little bit. I'm not saying at all that is what's happening here with Tommy Fleetwood, because it's hard to stay kind of as good as he was as a top 15 player for X number of years for longer than that. But I do think it's interesting that that could be part of the problem.
I think he's a little bit hurt by the style of like tour golf, PGA Tour golf. You know, since he's been doing that more full time, although I guess did he lose it? I think he lost his card this year, right?
I believe that is correct because we were talking about that a couple months ago, and I don't think anything has changed. So I'm pretty sure he does not have a tour card.
So I think he just like what he does well, which is shot shaping. I think his driving has dropped off a little bit as well. If you look at some of the numbers, but the things he does well play great on European tour style courses, a lot of them, not all of them. And at major championships, at the Open, at the US Open, places where ball striking, shot shaping, playing fast and firm is like, just is really, what's the word I'm looking for? Like you're awarded disproportionately at those events compared to regular PGA Tour stops. And so I think some of it might be like, maybe his confidence is a little bit beaten down because he's not thriving at the Bridgestones and they don't even go there anymore. But you know, that style, of course, that the PGA Tour is more known for than kind of where he was thriving before. Am I making sense there?
No. And again, that it's in a lot of things in life and a lot of things, especially in golf, are the 20-80 rule, right? You get 80% of your results and 20% of the inputs, right? And 20% of that means five events a year, you're making the vast majority of your money. And if you get and for Tommy, for a long time, those were bigger events. He wasn't winning them, but they were bigger events and he was thriving in them. So no, I think that logic does track.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful. I mean, I think about back even to like the 2019 Open at Portrush when it was him and Shane Lowry, and it's so fun. He's such a fun character at those tournaments.
Yeah, that's a good point. He got buzzsawed by Lowry by six. I mean, like, you know what I mean? It's like JB Holmes at Troon. Okay. Where do you want to go next? You want to go Morikawa, Xander, or Ricky?
Let's go Ricky.
Ricky Fowler follows up his week thank you very much, at the CJ Cup, where he was in contention with Rory McIlroy throughout, with a T44 at the Zozo Championship, rounds of 70, 71, 71, 71. We don't have the strokes gained metrics to really see how it bared out, but I saw a couple of big numbers on Ricky's scorecard. Obviously, one event across the globe you could chalk up to a lot of things, but for me, as of right now, as we trend towards the end of 2021 and we get into 2022, Ricky Fowler is one of the more interesting storylines for me next year.
I agree. And I also agree with you about the big numbers. I mean, he had the triple double that you don't want to have. He had a triple bogey and two doubles. That's not good. I'm not worked up about it. I think CJ Cup, and again, strokes, not having strokes gained is hard when you do have it for CJ Cup and you're trying to figure out, okay, like what was going on here? Why did you make a triple? Whatever. His problem has not really been that he's not scoring. He's still making a lot of birdies and eagles. But if you look at his bogey average or bogey avoidance or whatever from last season, it wasn't very good. And I think he was 135th on tour in bogey avoidance or something like that. I don't know. That might have been a different stat. I think that's what it was. And that's where, especially at majors, it's like, man, the John Rahms and, you know, guys like that, like they save pars. They just don't make those huge numbers. And that's always been, you know, I remember, I think it was Aaron Hills or maybe it was Quail Hollow. One of those majors in like 2017 time, Ricky played so well. And then he makes a triple on the first day and there was a stat from Justin Ray. It's like, nobody's ever won after making it. He just takes himself out of it in ways that are unhelpful. And that happened, not that he was going to win this week because I thought Hideki was amazing, but he just, that like those mistakes, if he can figure out how to make those like zero, like pars and even just like bogeys, I think he can have like a pretty nice 2022.
Yeah, this week it was big numbers, and it was big number. He made a double on a par five. It's hard to do. Last season, made bogey or worse on 17.7% of his holes. That is 155th on tour out of 196 qualified golfers. So the bottom 25%, he made, you know, makes more bogeys than a lot of guys on tour.
And he's still scoring, which I think is encouraging. Correct.
Yeah, he was like seventh in birdie or better percentage or something like that, which I do think is encouraging is the perfect word for it. That's exactly what it is. It's encouraging.
And I think the weird part is like he's not if those were like Matthew Wolf's numbers that we just said, you'd be like, oh, well, he's 22. He doesn't know what he's doing or whatever. You would say that about any young guy. But with Fowler, he does. I mean, he's been out there for 11 years and he does know what he's doing. So that's where you get to have a little more concern of, okay, is that like a swing? It seems more like a swing issue than like a mental issue.
Colin Morikawa, I would argue didn't play all that well. Ends up finishing T7, which I think is just basically, I don't know though. I was going to say basically his baseline right now, but we've talked about this a lot, KP. He is, to me, intentionally volatile. He is, it's why he wins so often, but he is just, without his best stuff, a top eight player on tour. And actually, hold on. I don't think it's been issued yet, but Nosferatu on Twitter tells me he's going to become the number two player in the world.
Wow.
How about that?
Do you think he can overtake Rahm next year?
He's 62 events into his official world golf ranking career, and he's going to be the number two ranked player in the world. Do I think he can overtake John Rahm next year? Let me look at the gap. Yeah, I think he can.
What's the gap?
Well, it's not updated yet, but it'll be about 1.4-ish average points. So Rahm will be like a 10 and Morikawa will be like an 8.5 or 8.6.
Okay.
Which will be the same gap between Morikawa and DJ, who will basically be 2 and 3, to the guys at 4 and 5. It'll be like that same gap.
So there's a, I'm going to butcher this, but there's a new feature on Data Golf. Have you seen this?
Describe it. I don't know what we're talking.
It's called it's under the strokes gained query tool.
Real quick, my wife always does that. She goes, "So yesterday, did I tell you this already?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Like, you haven't given me enough of the story yet to tell you.
You haven't told me anything.
You've told me this, so I'm not really sure."
So there's a new feature on Data Golf that is, it shows you, it's called box plots. And you can rank guys by their, essentially by like their best stuff. You can say, okay, like who, like when players are performing at the, I'm not going to say this correctly, but hopefully it makes sense. When players are performing at their 95th percentile, how good is that compared to everybody else's 95th percentile? And they have it, you can rank it by like 90, I think it's 95th, 75th, then their median. So like, like the middle essentially, and then 25th percentile and 5th percentile. And I was emailing with those guys, Will and Matt. They do an awesome job. They're great dudes. And they were talking about how the golf community has sort of talked about how Morikawa is volatile. And they said that the numbers match up where if you sort by whose 95th percentile is best, he's up at the top. And if you sort by whose 25th percentile is also best, he's actually at closer to the bottom. So like his good is really, really good, and his bad is pretty bad.
Right.
And honestly, like, we talk about this all the time. Isn't that what you want? Like, isn't that how you want your data to kind of play out?
If I could, if you removed every golfer, professional golfer from the planet, and we still knew, like the modern game, if they said like create the type of player that you wanted, I would create Colin Morikawa. I would create a guy who is just deadly on approach, who can lose or gain 4 or 5 strokes putting in a single week. I would want a guy that embraces volatility because he'd be hoisting a ton of trophies. And if you finish T55, no one cares. Like, to me, if I could mold someone for, I don't know what the metric would be, like today's game, it would be very, very close to what Morikawa does. I'd make him a little bit longer, but like now I'm asking too much, right? Like, he's so good.
So I just sorted over the last 12 months by like the 95th percentile, and he's third behind Rahm and Cantlay, which no surprise. And then I sorted by 25th percentile, which is like kind of your bad stuff. And he is down. I don't have the exact number, but he's down with like Matt Wallace, K.H. Lee, Lonto Griffin, Chad Ramey, Brandon Grace, Andrew Putnam, like not people that that you would associate with Colin Morikawa. Right. And so I think that's interesting. I wanted to throw that out there. I don't know how that relates to his T7 this week. I'm with you. It was kind of like after the first day, you're like, well, Morikawa is probably, I mean, with having Hideki up there and how deep he took it on day one, it's just, it's hard to kind of play your way back into it on a course that was playing pretty tough, especially through the middle couple days. So, I thought it was a fine show. And I think for him, like coming off CJ, coming off Zozo, I think you can go into 2022 with a ton of confidence that you didn't have maybe after the FedEx Cup of like, okay, Morikawa really could become the number one player in the world. And maybe that's reading too much into just two tournaments, but that kind of covered up anything that he did poorly during the FedEx Cup for me.
We are, I'm looking at this. We are, again, I'm no OWGR aficionado, but we are, we're like a month out from, maybe a little bit more than that, the end of the year from a lot of really good Rahm results falling off and a lot of bad Morikawa results falling off, which is only going to improve his position going into 2022. So it would not surprise me one single bit if early in 2022, Colin Morikawa becomes your number one player in the world.
I think that might be one of, I do 10 predictions like going into the new year. I think that might be one of them, is that he'll become the number one player in the world.
I mean, he might win, he could win tournament champions, and probably that might do it.
Yeah. Or something like early, like if he wins Riviera, I'd be like, oh yeah, sure.
Mm. Xander Schauffele, I don't have anything to say. He was the favorite coming into the event. He finished T28. He played himself out of it on Friday when he shot a 74. He was great on the weekend. Xander's great.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. He just needs to win in 2022. I think I go back to what I said about him, like Cantlay in 2021. All of a sudden, you win 3 times, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, that makes up for kind of the lack of winning over the last 2 or 3 years.
Who needs a win the most? Because when we talked about this like 6 months ago, maybe a little bit longer. Maybe 6 months ago. And Spieth was top of list, right? It was like, needs it. I don't care what it is, any event, anywhere. Who needs a win? Rory's back in the winner's circle a couple times. Spieth in the winner's circle.
Probably Cameron Tringale.
Well, definitely. But definitely on the short list.
You know who kind of needs a win? Dustin Johnson.
DJ. Was this the first year that he went without winning, right? In like a decade.
Yeah, that one was, I think there was another year. I think it was like consecutive seasons.
Yeah, when you do seasons, it's, because he did not win in the calendar year of 2014, but I believe he did win a PGA Tour event in 2014, like a season.
That's right. That's right. So he's Xander's up there for me, I think.
Yeah, I think he's got to be top of my list. I'm just scrolling through the world rankings because so 6 months ago it was Finau and Spieth. Those were the ones that needed wins. Now I think it's an answer even got his. So now we're like, okay, I'm kind of bottom of the barrel. Now I think it's Xander.
Yeah, I think so. Who was I just thinking about? Where's Tommy Fleetwood ranked?
40th.
Okay. So that, like if he was, I mean, he's up there, I think, I guess. I don't really know how to categorize him right now. So maybe he's not. But if we're still thinking about him as a star, he was a little bit in that Finau category for me of,
yeah.
Are you a star? Cause like we haven't really.
Okay. How about a couple of younger guys? How long until we're like, why doesn't Joaquin Niemann win more?
Oh, you know who mine actually is?
Wait, Xander? Can I?
Yeah.
It's not Matthew Wolf, is it?
No.
Okay. Close. Who is it?
Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Okay,
so those two guys, right? So Niemann won early. He won Greenbrier like a couple years ago. And Scheffler's never won. How much longer before we in the media start ripping these guys apart for not winning enough?
Well, I think Niemann is a little bit just kind of who he is. Like I'm not like his skill set is awesome and it's super fun to watch. I just don't know if the win equity is super high. Scheffler is a little different in that he's really thrived at a lot of majors. I think he's got six top 15s in his last seven, something like that. And so you're like, well, what is this here? Because he's thrived at majors. He takes down Rahm at the Ryder Cup. And it's like, you got to win like a Colonial or something. Now, I don't think like he has to do it in 2021 and maybe even in 2022, but at some point you got to start winning a little bit to kind of, I don't know, I hate the word like validate your, how well right. you're playing, but a little bit, you know,
it's weird so because
I would,
if he
I would
goes
say Scheffler over Niemann,
Scheffler's a good one. It's weird because if he goes 12 more years without winning, we will praise him for keeping his card and making more money than anyone without a victory and saying how good he is. But in like the short term, it's like you either have to win soon or break the record and never win.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's expectations, right? Like you go to a Ryder Cup and you beat Jon Rahm on a Sunday, all of a sudden, and whether this is fair or not, like our expectation of who you are and what you're going to be is really high. And I would throw maybe Zalatoris in there. He's so young and he's so inexperienced. He's not super, super young. But if he's like legitimately going to be a top 20, top 15 guy, I would kind of throw his name in there also.
Okay. Well, we've got our watch list for the next year or so. Best bets, we did pretty darn good. I was the only one who lost. I went with a plus 400 Sean Norris to be top South African over EVR, Brandon Grace, and Garrick Higo. He finished second. Brandon Grace beat him there. So I lose, but the rest of these are winners. So Coach got Ricky Fowler over Emiliano Grillo. Greg went with Tom Hoagie, top 20, plus 300. And you, Kyle, went with Colin Morikawa over Emiliano Grillo and EVR Erik van Rooyen, which I don't think was even ever close. EVR finished 48th. Grillo finished.
No, so I think my actual bet was Higo, not Grillo. Because it was two.
It was two South Africans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I'm going to change this in the outline. So Higo, which then Higo finished 75th. EVR finished.
So I'm still safe.
Yeah, you are by a mile. This one cashed.
I almost went with I think it was CT Pan over Lonto Griffin. Oof. And I changed it at the last minute because I'm glad for that because CT Pan shot 76 on Thursday. So yeah, Morikawa was who I thought he was this week.
CT Pan got better every single round, but it doesn't help when your first round was a 76. Yeah.
He finally broke par on Sunday.
If you shoot a 68 on Thursday and get better every round, you're winning the golf tournament. But if you go 76, 73, 70, 68, not so great. One and done. Oh boy. There was cash paid out in the one and done. There's the updated standings if you're watching on YouTube with our selections from this week. Couple of notable things here. Coach not at the bottom. We'll get to Coach in a second. Sia Najad at the bottom. 155,000. He went with Johnny Vegas. Vegas finished T54. 20,497. That doesn't seem like enough, does it? I thought the min was like 50K in these.
Yeah, the purse was like 10 mil.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Top they heavy. Were missing a zero in there.
Kyle, you're next. Now, to your credit, you got $250,000 from Colin Morikawa, a T7. Unfortunately, the rest of us got a lot more money, but how do you feel about getting this? Is like, to me, this is a weird amount. Are you happy you got $250,000 from Morikawa, or do you wish you got more? Obviously, you wish you got more.
Yeah, of course I wish I got more. I think I'm actually okay with it. I feel good about like the I thought the pick was I'm glad I made that pick. And I think that this is, if it was less than this, I'd be like, that's a bummer. But with this, I'm fine. I'm not like overjoyed, but I think it's a fine outcome for taking Morikawa this early in the year.
I agree. I'm trying to see. I thought I ran this last year, and I thought, 200,000. So basically the winner of ours last year got $10 million at the end of the year. And then the big payout at the end, but essentially if you got 200 or 225,000 every event last year, you would have won. So this is kind of right in that happy area.
Yeah.
Let's see. Greg was the only other non Hideki backer this week. He went with Ricky Fowler, T44, 29,452. Greg drops from first to fifth. And I know he had his shortlist down to Hideki and Ricky, and he might be ruining that decision.
Well, remember when you said that there's no way he would not be in first on Sunday night?
And now I said I'd take any bet.
And now he's in, not only is he not in first, he's not in second, third, or fourth either.
For that like 2 minutes where I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, you thought he had picked Hideki. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he picked Hideki. For that 2 minutes, he could have gotten 1,000 to 1 that he would be in fifth after the week. So with that being said, Coach, I'm sure this is the biggest payday he's had to date. Went with Hideki, as did I, as did Jacob, as did Mark. So the current standings now look like this. Mark extends out to a $1.2 million lead. He's at 3.4. Jacob, 2.2 million in second. I'm in third, 2.1. Coach, living in the middle, baby, 1.9. Greg, 1.7. Kyle, 375,000. Sia Najad, 155,000. Wow. Well, I don't think we've had a week where four of us found the winner. That's got to be a record.
Producer Jacob, hop in here. I want to ask you something.
Okay.
When I sent the text on Wednesday of Hideki's transcript where he said, if I was a 10 going into or at the Masters, my game was a 10 and it's less than a 1 this week, how did you feel?
Terrible at first. And then thankfully, Rick G chimed in with the quote from Morikawa ahead of the British Open where he was complaining.
That was such a good pull.
Which is, yeah. Which gave
so
me
glad
all
you brought that up.
I slept so peacefully Wednesday night, knowing that Hideki was just done over in Japan.
Great. I'm glad for you and your Braves. Advancing to World Series.
And also, just on top of that, I think that number is right as far as the names lower down. Because if you remember, these events are like co-sanctioned by the Japanese tour. So those players who get in that end up finishing, you know, T54 from those tours, like if you give them a high amount of money, it screws their order of merit all up. Since it's like technically, in my theory at least.
Yes. And I think you're right. I was thinking of the WGCs, I thought were 50. I thought that's what Berger got when he hit the drive and then withdrew on Thursday morning. I think he got 50 grand. That's why I always think 50 grand is the minimum payout in these. But that's a good point, Jake.
Yep.
The Hideki thing, I think Mark brought this up, but him telling the press that he was a 1. on like his game was a one, and then going out and shooting 64 was basically like his media version of a one-handed finish that ends like 8 feet from the pin, right? Like that's just who he is. I should have of all people should have seen that coming.
It is amazing what these guys will say and then what they will do. It's like
he doubled down on it. On Sunday, he said, well, I had like my game is a two or a three this week. I'm like, you won by five.
It's incredible. It's like, it's the golf version of in the NFL. It's like coach speak, or it's like, I always think of it when they get to training camp and every player ever is in the best shape of their life.
Best shape of my life. Yeah.
Best shape of my life. Every single player. Yeah.
Everyone's time. Also totally. Fighting for their job. It's a completely level playing field whenever you get out to training camp too.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Completely level. Yeah. Every job's an open competition for sure. Yeah. Everybody knows that. Even Tom Brady. All right, gentlemen, that will do it. We are moving on to Bermuda. Don't look this up. The Butterfield Bermuda Championship. What in the hell is Butterfield?
Butterfield is baby. I think they make I don't want to embarrass myself, but I think they make like soap and like bath and body products.
They do not.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I can only think of like buttermilk, like chicken, or like buttermilk ranch or something like that. Like that's all I can think about.
But I almost said they make quilts. So that would have been worse. I don't know why that came to my mind.
You think there's a big thriving quilt industry and they're trying to get into the golf demographic? Do you think that's happening? It's a bank.
What are they?
It's a Bermuda-based bank. Yeah. Trust me. It took me four Google searches to figure it out. So it's not like I knew.
Yeah, Butterfield just sounds like, I don't know, it's in Bermuda too. Like they don't make sunscreen. Are we sure?
It sounds cozy, Butterfield.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not.
This is a fun game. We should do this more often. What does BMW do?
That's where we're headed. Bermuda, then I think Mayakoba, then somewhere else, because that's how golf
Brooks and Brooksy.
The win. That will be the day after Thanksgiving. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob. Does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, it's Kyle Porter. You can find him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS, and you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.